Hey, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9 coming to you from Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. We are at that conference, which is a really fun conference.
It is.
Is this your first one?
So this will be my third year here.
Third year. Yeah. Tell us, what do you like about it?
The bacon keeps me coming back.
There's a lot of bacon. For those that don't like bacon, there's other things.
And I suppose, you know, there's a little technology here.
That's the other thing. I'm so glad we talked about that. So tell us who you are and what you do, bud.
So my name is Scott Addy. I am a Microsoft MVP, focused mostly on, lately, the ASP.NET Core stuff.
So it's newish, isn't it?
It is.
Are you giving any talks here?
Not this year, no.
So, well, this counts as a talk.
I guess this counts as a talk, yeah. I'm doing an open space, actually, following this, and the topic would be migration to ASP.NET Core.
So let's talk about that, because it I've heard, and you can correct me because you've been doing this, that going from ASP.NET old to ASP.NET Core is a little bit of a jump. Is it like jumping over like a huge chasm, or is it like hopscotch? I mean, what?
So I would look at it almost like a completely new framework.
Okay.
What's basically happened is the kitchen sink that we've all known as system.web has been removed.
Yes.
Now we've moved to more of an a la carte approach. You're picking out the pieces that you're going to need in your application, wiring those up as middleware. What this means is there's really no conversion tool available. As you mentioned, it could be a painful process to move from the legacy, let's say, MVC world to the new core MVC world.
So what are some strategies that you've had that allow you to go from the old to the new?
Best strategy I've found, honestly, is to just file new project in Visual Studio, create a new ASP.NET web application. But this is the point where you need to make a decision right within the file new project dialog. Are you targeting the shiny new .NET Core framework, or I should just say .NET Core, or is it the full .NET framework that we've all used for years?
So I love that you bring this up, because I think there's some confusion, and hopefully you'll be able to clarify this, that when you go ASP.NET Core, that you are necessarily targeting the core framework. And that's not the case. You can target the full framework.
Absolutely.
Or core, is that right?
Yep. And quite honestly, that's what I hear most often when people are thinking about, oh, I'm going to migrate my legacy application to ASP.NET Core, but they're thinking, well, that also means I need to know about this .NET Core thing. But that's simply not the case. You could target either .NET Core or .NET Framework, and honestly, your easiest migration path would be ASP.NET Core targeting the full .NET Framework.
And why would that be? What is the difference? Maybe that will help.
So the difference there would be there's certain APIs that are missing from .NET Core. They simply haven't been added in yet. Mm-hmm. And so if you're, let's say you're using the system.drawing APIs somewhere in your application, those are actually going to be incompatible with .NET Core, which is obviously going to pose a problem.
Sure.
So there's tools out there that can help with this particular problem. The .NET Portability Analyzer, I believe it's called, that's one option, and that's actually an extension that you can install in Visual Studio 2015.
And I think I did a video with some of the PMs on this that you can go and look at, and it's really cool.
Yep. Also, the folks at Octopus Deploy have created a similar tool. It's called IconHas.NET Core. Catchy
nice.
Name.
Yeah, so, IconHas. I haven't heard that.
So if nothing else, check it out just because it has a cool name.
And so what that will do is that will tell you whether or not you can target the core framework.
Correct.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't target the full framework.
Right, right.
So what are some of the main sort of things that I need to think about? Let's just say I'm going to go easy path. I'm going to go .NET, ASP.NET Core, targeting the full framework. What are some things that I need to think about as I move forward?
So there's going to be some low-hanging fruit you can pick off right from the get-go. You're going to have your MVC controllers. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's going to change in there is within each of the action methods, you're going to change the return type from action result to iAction result.
Okay.
You know, easy to do things like that. Something that's new that we haven't had in the past is dependency injection.
Uh-huh.
That's baked in. So if you haven't used it in the past, now is a good time to consider it. It doesn't require pulling in a third-party framework like a Ninject or AutoFac.
But you still can if you want to.
Correct.
So before, when I did these sort of MVC applications, I always used dependency injection anyway, and I had to do some crazy thing where I said anytime a controller is instantiated, inject some things. How do you, does this just happen? How do you register
so
dependencies?
So I believe it's a startup CS file. You're actually going to wire up your IOC container as middleware. Mm-hmm. You know, for something like AutoFac, it could be as simple as a couple of lines of code that you're writing in that startup CS file.
So the other question is, let's just say you want to go with what the dependency injection that's built in. How does it know when I need a dependency, whether to make it a singleton or to instantiate every time the controller? How does it know that?
Yeah, so you're actually, again, defining that within the middleware pipeline, wiring it up with, you know, a couple lines of code, and there's different options there. And I'm by no means an expert on dependency injection, but you know, there's going to be extension methods like add transient. That's an option. Add scoped. Kind of to your point.
Got it.
So you're actually defining how that's going to work as you're wiring up the middleware.
So you mentioned the dependency injection that's new. You mentioned changing to iAction result. What are some other gotchas that you should be aware of as you're transitioning?
The other big one we're going to see is just breaking changes in NuGet in general. So if you were migrating from an older version of Visual Studio, let's say 2012, 2013, you were probably using NuGet version 2.
Right.
We moved to NuGet version 3 in 2015. One of the big things that changes there is in an ASP.NET Core project, there's no longer support for content files. So if you look at things like Bootstrap, if you would have installed those in the old world, you would have gotten, you know, a scripts folder, a content folder, where all of your static assets are dumped.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the biggest criticisms of NuGet back in those days. Those folders essentially became a dumping grounds for static content files.
Right.
That's gone away, and so now you can actually break away from the XML-based packages config manifest file and move to this new project.json-based file. JSON format. The advantage there is, instead of installing your NuGet dependencies alongside your solution file, they're now stored in a per-user cache. So on Windows, if you were to look at your roaming profile, you're going to see a .NuGet folder in there with that same packages folder you would have seen before.
Interesting.
So what this is going to result in is less disk space being consumed by your NuGet packages.
Oh, that's interesting. So you need to need to consider now how dependencies are brought in. And
absolutely,
there's certain dependencies that you may have had that are only NuGet 2.0 that you will not be able to use in the
yep.
project.
NuGet also introduces this concept of transient or transitive dependencies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, you may have had to pull in you know, Microsoft.ASP.NET.MVC and some other supporting packages. Now you really only need to tell NuGet, I need this top-level package. It'll figure out the rest for you. There's fewer dependencies that you need to know about, less cognitive strain.
Awesome. So we talked about dependency injection. We talked about return types and controllers. We talked about NuGet. Give me one more that you think is important.
I guess another one, you know, while we're on the topic of package management, is this topic of Bower.
Mm.
So, you know, this is a new concept in the .NET ecosystem. Again, just another thing that has, you know, scared people off from looking into the new core world. And what Bower's purpose is in this new world is to fill that void that's left by NuGet. So I had mentioned NuGet no longer allows you to get static content files.
Mm-hmm.
Bower is now the new recommendation for that. So if we look at how Microsoft is using Bower, things like SignalR, those are actually published out to the Bower feed by the Microsoft team.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's all open source.
So what does Bower... What is its only job to bring static files? Maybe I don't understand.
Yeah, so if you were to use Bower, you would use it just for static content files. So if you're using things like Angular or React or Bootstrap or jQuery, those are the types of things you would use Bower for, to acquire and install those.
So Bower is more for your client-side kind of things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So we talked about sort of we talked about dependency injection, we talked about controller stuff, we talked about NuGet. We talked about Bower. Obviously, when we're talking about web development, there is this interesting notion now of a lot of stuff is happening on the client side,
yep.
And we're used to, if especially if you're relying on system.web with ASP.NET web forms, you're relying on a lot of stuff happening on the server side. Did Microsoft make new tooling for all the client-side stuff too, or did it sort of just inject into whatever was there already?
So I've been following this from the early beta phases of the project, and things have changed quite honestly all throughout that process. We started off with, I think, beta 5, and we were using a tool called Grunt as essentially a node-based tool to compile all of the static assets that we have in our application.
Sure.
From there, we moved to Gulp.
Gulp, right.
Very similar to Grunt. Gulp lived on through RC2. Before we hit RTM, very recently, that was actually replaced with a Microsoft-authored tool called the Bundler and Minifier.
Okay.
And so what Bundler and Minifier allows you to do is define a bundleconfig.json file in the root of your ASP.NET project. Mm-hmm. And in JSON format, you're essentially describing what needs to be bundled and minified in terms of static assets in your application. Now, for people like me who are heavily invested in the RCs of ASP.NET Core, I wanted to stick with Gulp. And thankfully, this bundler and minifier, if you have that extension installed in Visual Studio, will allow you to revert back to the Gulp world.
And that Mads Christensen made all those extensions, didn't he?
Yep, yep.
And so you do have that option of choice. There's stuff that comes in, but you also have choices.
Yeah, and you know the biggest criticism with Gulp was, you know, hey, I install all of this node-based tooling through NPM, and it creates this massive node modules folder in the root of the project. What's going on in there?
Right. And then sometimes you'd reach max path problems and things would be. So for those that you've mentioned a couple of things, how has sort of the transition gone for you?
It's been rocky at points, you know, just trying to get my teams up to speed on concepts that we weren't taking advantage of before, like dependency injection. That's been a hurdle. They're definitely seeing the value in it.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's brought us a step closer to test-driven development.
Awesome.
So big plus there.
Love it. So where can people go to find out more about you and what you do?
So scottaddy.com, you can find me there on my blog. I actually contribute to some of the ASP.NET docs. So if you were to go out to docs.asp.net, and actually if you click on the migration link in the margin out there, there's a doc that talks a lot about what we discussed today.
Awesome. Well, make sure you look that up. We'll try to get the links in there at the bottom of the video. Well, thanks so much for your time, my friend.
All right.
Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We're at that conference in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, over the wonderful fire. And you may not be able to hear this, but they have like this little thing that makes it sound like a fire. And sometimes there's even smoke. And you may have noticed the fly around my head. It is like we're literally camping. Oh, there we go. There we go. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Seth.
And again, as you know, smoke follows beauty. We'll see you next time. Take care.